Welcome to The Take on Commercial Real Estate, a podcast produced by the Commercial Association of Realtors Wisconsin. We explore issues and topics that impact the commercial real estate industry. We talk with the experts to gain insights and information that help business leaders and commercial real estate practitioners enhance their clients' success. Commercial real estate is not just about buildings and infrastructure, but about business, job creation, and economic development. This series is produced with support from the National Association of Realtors and Landmark Credit Union. I'm Tracy Johnson, your host for The Take on Commercial Real Estate. Today, we're joined by Lawrence Yoon, Chief Economist with the National Association of Realtors. NAR is America's largest trade association, representing 1.5 million members, including NAR's institutes, societies, and councils, involved in all aspects of the residential and commercial real estate industries. Lawrence is often quoted on matters of the economy, policy, and any real estate issue from housing to cold storage and ghost kitchens. His research department produces dozens of regular reports, including the Commercial Market Insights, which highlights in-depth analysis and market insights on the commercial real estate market, with a focus on multifamily, office, industrial, and retail properties. Lawrence, welcome to the show. Let's start with the first question. Talk a little bit about the overall health of the commercial real estate market nationally.
Tracy, thank you for having me. Generally speaking, the commercial real estate market follows the economic trends. So as the economy improves, naturally job creation brings about demand for apartment spaces, the retail shopping, industrial spaces, and generally office, except now in the post-COVID, or I should say, I'm not sure when we get out of this COVID, but at least we're getting back to a more normal condition. But the office market is somewhat different because the work-from-home flexibility that is offered by many companies, we don't know what the equilibrium would be in terms of hybrid model, what is the right. But right now, given that the economy, after losing 20 million jobs in the month of March, has steadily regained most of those job losses. We're almost back to normal, and consequently, we are seeing that commercial real estate market holding healthy, except for office, which is somewhat on the edge, a little wobbly, but the apartment, industrial, very, very solid.
So of the apartments and industrial real estate, can you talk a little bit more about what's driving that?
So first, on the apartment, just because of the job creation, that has led to the positive net absorption in the apartment. Vacancy rates have been steadily trending down. Beginning of this year, in 2022, mortgage rates suddenly shot up from 3% mortgage rate to close to 6% today. And that has forced many people who wanted to buy essentially to be priced out. They don't have the financial capacity, so now they are scrambling to renew their lease or find another rental spaces. And consequently, the rental demand has really became with extra strength this year, and the rents are rising very strongly. The government data is saying the rents are rising about 5.5% from 1 year ago. But based on my conversation with many commercial realtors, practitioners, they're saying rents are rising far higher than that from 1 year ago. But irrespective, the apartment sector is very strong just because people cannot buy a home from higher mortgage rates. So quite a switch on the demand for rental housing.
Now, you may have seen this happen in the past when mortgage interest rates rise and fall. Do you foresee this to hold into the future, or do you think that as supply becomes of housing becomes more available, more prevalent, you will move into home ownership?
There's naturally a trade-off. You know, if someone is buying a home, then they are not a renter, and vice versa. The only difference this time is that right before COVID, back in March 2020, We actually had quite a significant housing shortage, not enough homes for sale. The vacancy rates on apartments were trending downward. So this was a consequence of almost a decade, 10 straight years of underproduction of housing units in America, whether single family or multifamily. And consequently, we had the housing shortage even before the onset of this ugly COVID. And once the COVID came around, well, the housing demand really took off, meaning that home buying demand took off because of the low interest rate policy from the Federal Reserve. But nonetheless, the apartment sector still appeared to be gaining a steady increase in demand, aside from the first few months of the lockdown. You know, those were scary times. I think young adults who lost their job, they immediately moved in with their parents or found the extra roommate. But with the job creations steadily recovering, that has began to fuel the apartment demand. So it's an interesting case where both home ownership, the home prices rising strongly at a time when rents are also rising strongly, which is a reflection of a housing shortage broadly in America.
So when you look at the demand and the rents rising, obviously some areas geographically throughout the country are going to fare better than others. What are you noticing in terms of population shifts? And maybe, you know, during the shutdown, we heard that people were leaving some of the big cities, moving to some of the tertiary markets. You know, is that going the other direction now? What's happening there?
So it is the suburban market that has been extra strong compared to the downtown city locations. I mean, one can look at Chicago as an example, where the suburban market really began to take off. I think part of it is, you know, that work from home flexibility, that don't have to commute to downtown. The other reason, which should not be understated, is crime. People don't like crime. So if there is a prevalence of crime, people want to say, well, I don't want to take the metro. And also, if I don't have to go to downtown, then I will stay in the suburb. So all the commercial real estate sector, whether it is the retail sector, the suburban market doing better than the downtowns, the apartment also doing better. There is beginning of sort of return back to downtown somewhat because the price differential, meaning that rent increases in the suburb has been far stronger than the downtown. So people look at the relative difference. You know, certainly living in the city, there's more livelier, more entertaining for, you know, some crowd who enjoy that type of living. So now they say, oh, you know, downtown offers a better rent condition than out in the suburbs. So we are beginning to shift and also return back to office to some degree. Now, geographically also, another point is that the southern states have been outperforming and the Rocky Mountain states. So the Rocky Mountain states are actually benefiting from Californians moving into Utah, Idaho, Arizona, while Florida, Georgia, Carolinas are benefiting from people moving in from, say, northeastern states or even from the Midwest. You know, many Chicago residents, once they reach the retirement age, at least the wealthy individuals are essentially going to Florida and retiring there. So one do see some geographic locality, you know, between states, but even within a given market, one sees a variation, suburbs doing better than the downtowns.
So when it comes to an area like the Rocky Mountains, Rocky Mountain region that is less developed, what is the course of progression when it comes to the real estate sectors? You talk about the rooftops, or is it the retail? Is it the office? Which comes first? And what are you seeing in the trends?
I think it's the housing. You know, people move in, they need some housing. So whether apartment, the rent increases, rent absorption, I should say the occupancy absorption, along with home prices are reflective of the demand. And then, you know, one sees that the spending naturally with more people, you know, retail spending begins to rise along with it. Now, the industrial is a little different because, you know, that's online shopping, and therefore the warehouses could be far away from the actual destinations where they have to deliver the goods. The office, again, remains a little uncertain. It's a unique environment. I think the COVID essentially accelerated a trend that may have taken over a 20-year time span, but it was just pushed into a single year to say, can people really work from home? And we were forced to work from home, or at least the office workers, and they have demonstrated, oh, yes, we can work from home. So I think there is a big debate within the business community to see, do we bring the workers back 5 days a week, or do we lose workers? You know, what is the right balance? I don't think people have really figured that out. There will be a lot of trial and error in the process. Just on the Wisconsin market, Tracy, because, you know, you cover Wisconsin, you know, I noticed that, like, the Madison has consistently outperformed other cities because somehow there's a migration pattern towards Madison, far stronger, say, than to, say, Milwaukee. And this has really boosted the commercial real estate sector in Madison, again, attesting that where people move to, like the Rocky Mountain states or to Madison, this is where one sees a stronger performance in the commercial real estate sector.
No, that certainly is a great point. You can't drive up Washington without seeing just new apartments going up left and right. And so naturally that office and the job creation will follow. So we're definitely seeing that in our state. So touching a little bit more on that office real estate market, people talked a lot about the sublease activity possibly increasing, you know, as leases were extended. A blend and extend was the term that we talked about a lot. What are you seeing in this area, and what is the long-term impact of increased sublease availability?
You know, the companies who took out a direct lease as a main tenant, maybe they decide to do a 3 floors of office spaces in a certain location, 3 floors. And now they don't need that much space, given that maybe they're changing some of the furniture arrangement, maybe shareable desk. I'm not sure how it will do. So now they say, well, we don't need that 1 floor. Maybe we should sublease it out. So I think the subleasing will become more popular than ever before, just because companies really haven't figured it out what the permanence of this new hybrid office model would be. And hence, there will be much greater subleasing activity in today's environment compared to, say, 3 years ago, 4 years ago, or 5 years ago. And some places where there is a high vacancy rate, meaning places like San Francisco, even though the technology sector is doing very well, it is the technology companies that are offering more flexibility to work from home, say Facebook, Apple, and consequently, the buildings are, office buildings are remaining empty, which means that they would certainly consider subleasing as an opportunity. And as a new tenant, subleasing always is a better option. First, it offers greater flexibility. It doesn't have to be long 10-year lease. It could be 2 or 3 year lease. And generally, one can negotiate for a better rental rate for a new tenant. So I think the subleasing will be a much greater proportion now compared to pre-COVID.
What are you seeing in terms of adaptive reuse or redevelopment to meet the demand for housing?
Yeah, you know, that is a very good question, because we talk about empty office buildings. You know, even office buildings, say in downtown Chicago, where they say on the paper, it shows 80% occupancy, meaning that the payment of the rents are being made on 80% of the space. But the actual person could be only 40% occupied because, again, you know, people are working from home. So given that the buildings are fairly empty, office buildings are empty, at the same time, we have a housing shortage, you know, not enough apartment buildings, not enough condominiums, not enough. So is it possible to convert some of the empty buildings into a residential units? And that's obviously becomes just so obvious, even for elementary school kid. What is very complex is that it's not an easy financing activity, you know, to put individual bathroom units rather than a centralized near elevator location. All that requires a lot of money. What about the parking garage? You know, all that aspect needs to be considered. And hence, there is some repurposing going on, I mean, very small scale, but it tends to be a high-end apartment units. And because only way to make the numbers work is to do the high unit apartment units or condominium. But what is really needed is housing for the middle class, middle income, or even moderate income families. And only way to make the numbers work is either to offer tax credit for repurposing or provide direct government funding to say, okay, here's additional couple of million dollars, repurpose this building and convert it into more affordable housing. So it requires some government assistance, either in terms of direct funding or some tax credit incentives to make the numbers work. Because, you know, there's empty building shortage. How do we match that up? Sometimes it requires some financial incentives.
Well, and different cities and municipalities across the country will look at that differently because, you know, to have a housing in the middle of a city is a different tax ramification than having an office building. So, you know, the way that some of those incentives are going to be used is going to be an important and very interesting thing for you guys to look at in the future. And as I understand it, NAR has a huge push towards looking at affordable housing, workforce housing, and ensuring that, you know, that cities can remain vibrant and people can remain in a home.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, one do not want to see a desolate sidewalks. One wants to see the vibrancy, you know, people walking. And also, by the way, with more people walking the street, it actually lessens the crime. You know, crime happens when there is an empty streets. So all that will help on many aspects, you know, vibrancy of the city. So it will be a great thing to provide that incentive to convert some empty buildings into where things are much more livelier. And of course, as you mentioned, you know, changing some of the zoning structures from commercial zoning into residential zoning. Let's hope that the people who are involved in that understand, you know, having an empty building is not for the benefit of the city.
Well, I'm so glad that you mentioned the point about bringing people back to the city and making sure that the streets are filled and vibrant because, you know, being in Milwaukee, our office is right downtown. And during, you know, the shutdowns, many of the offices were unoccupied, which led to the restaurants not being open, which just kind of created this cycle of just emptiness. And so to see people coming back, I think is really a great thing. Now, the big challenge is seeing how people can fill these jobs in these restaurants. Many of our restaurants are still closed during the lunch hour because there aren't people to work or people who aren't available for them. But I wanted to ask you a little bit about the industrial real estate market. You guys do a ton of research on supply chain challenges, e-commerce, cold storage. I've seen some of your reports on that. Talk a little bit more about what's happening in that space, whether it's the development opportunities, the rental rates, even the importance of e-commerce in that realm.
COVID has also introduced a trend that was already being occurring, which is online shopping. You know, the Amazons of the world and other online shopping naturally led to the demand for warehouses, and that COVID simply accelerated that trend. But what we are finding is that people really want to walk the street. You know, sometimes you just do the online shopping with a click, and then you have to return it. And I think there is some bit of loss of joy in doing online shopping compared to actually going into the store. So I think, you know, people who are involved in warehouses, first, the demand has really strengthened during COVID. Will it continue? I'm not so sure if it can continue because people do want to walk the street. They do want to go to mall. So the growth rate, I think, will not match what it occurred in the past 2 years. We may go back to the prior growth rate, and the online shopping activity was, I think, rising about 10% a year, while the other in-store brick-and-mortar sales were only about half that rate. in terms of the growth rate. So we may get back to that normal growth rate, but there's also additional demand, I think, that is arising from the warehouse or industrial spaces, which is, given the experience of the supply chain disruptions, all the business schools in America, they constantly talk about efficiency, efficiency, efficiency. And the way you accomplish that is with just-in-time inventory. Don't carry excessive inventory. But when there is a supply chain disruption, you finally realize, oh, I cannot do my business because the doorknob is stuck in a container ship. So I think what this is raising is that many companies will want to have additional inventory buffer. So in other words, it's not going to be a just-in-time inventory, but it will be just-in-case extra inventory that companies want to hold so that they are not impacted by supply chain disruption in the future. And therefore, I think at least in over the next year or two, there will be continuous increase in demand for industrial spaces because they just want to store a little more items on the warehouse just in case there is a supply chain disruptions.
Well, in Wisconsin, I know the vacancy is somewhere around 4%, which I've been told that means we are turning business away. We are losing business because there is just not enough inventory. And, you know, when you think about construction costs, which I think impacts not just multifamily, but industrial when they're trying to do spec developments, because people don't want to build their warehouse for like 4 years from now. They want their warehouse now because it's all about the time, like you just said, right? So can you talk a little bit more about some of the other economic factors when it comes to the construction costs or even inflation impacting commercial real estate?
You know, there's a high inflation, which just makes the forces the Federal Reserve to raise interest rate, which means that the borrowing cost for any construction activity now begins to rise, which then one has to factor that in. So the costs of easy financing, I mean, those days are over. There will be greater scrutiny by the lenders as to how to justify why you want to expand warehouses or the multifamily housing, the inflation impact. And of course, we saw it in the, especially on the housing, on the lumber prices, where it just skyrocketed before returning and settling down. It is still above pre-COVID days, but this just testified that in the short term, there could be quite a volatility in the cost of construction, which is the reason why repurposing also makes better sense, because repurposing means you don't have to produce your own brick anymore. There is a brick already embedded, and therefore you're just repurposing it. So to hold down some of the cost, I think the repurposing also helps in that adjustment.
Great. You know, we talked a little bit about the retail market. You talked about the spending habits. Anything in terms of consumer behavior or other spending habits that will impact the retail sector? I've heard in our market that some of the footprints are shrinking, that the mall, we talk about the malls going away and some of these outlots being much more prevalent. What are you seeing when it comes to looking at that sector specifically?
So, you know, the shopping malls, I think even before COVID, I think there was just simply too many shopping malls per the population in a given city. So before the online shopping, maybe it was justifiable, but with online shopping, say in certain locality where there was a 4 shopping mall, maybe it can only support 3 now, which means one will stand empty, and especially with large anchor tenant leaving, say Macy's or another large Nordstrom leaving, that means it just has a ramification with other smaller retailers. So I think there will be some adjustment on the shopping. It will not mean that all shopping malls will go away. It just means that there was a surplus and some of the surplus needs to be removed from the marketplace, which could be converted into warehouses or something like even residential, maybe part apartment or senior housing. Other part could be, you know, possibly after school some learning center. And the retail demand is also changing. It's no longer the bookstore or the clothing shops. The demand for retail spaces are for, say, nail salons, the gym, fitness center. So it's a little different in terms of where the demand for retail spaces are coming from. It's not about selling stuff, but it's about selling service, you know, providing the space for fitness center, providing the school for maybe, you know, after school, some the private tutoring centers and nail salon, the hair cutlery and so forth. So a little different dynamics in terms of where the demand is coming from.
Well, yeah, and that's one thing to consider. What's the greatest asset of a mall? It's the location, right? So you start with location, location, location. And if a Nordstrom doesn't work there anymore, then something else will. And we've seen in our market, in the Wisconsin market, the repurposing of anchor store like Boston store, as an example, which went out of business just a few years ago, the repurposing to the potential multifamily or some other multi-use type of purpose. So I'd like to get your take on the future. I know you're not a fortune teller, but you look at what happened in the past and you kind of say, what should we be looking for? As we look ahead in the fourth quarter of 2022 and 2023, what should the practitioners be looking at? What should they be following? Is it the inflation rate? Is it the construction costs? Is it paying attention to population shifts? What do you think?
So first, the probability of an economic recession has greatly risen. I mean, I would even place as a 50-50 chance. Now, when I say recession, I'm looking at from economists' definition. From ordinary person's definition is when people are losing jobs. From economists, it's about two consecutive quarters of GDP contraction, generally correlated with some job losses. And we're already seeing some job losses in certain sectors like mortgage lending as refinance activity has completely died off. But overall, this recession will be quite unique in terms of there could be actually more job openings compared to people who are unemployed throughout the recession. Currently, as we are doing this recording, there are two job openings for one unemployed person in America. So even with recession, there could actually be more jobs than people are unemployed. Now, the job match may never match up. Say someone, an architect who lost a job, they're not interested in working for a restaurant, of course. So it doesn't really match up. But still, on the greater broad macroeconomic impact, it's a very unusual recession in terms of we may actually have more job opening than people who are unemployed if we were to technically fall into a recession. So I'm looking at that. The second part is how high will inflation go and at what point will begin to decelerate? Because one big component of the inflation figure that government tracks is the rents. And the rents are accelerating, meaning apartment rents are accelerating. And if this continues to surprise, then the Fed has to become even more aggressive in raising interest rates, which will just raise the cost of financing any new construction of commercial buildings. So, you know, that is a concern part. And the other part is that anytime there is a sluggishness in consumer spending, it will naturally filter into the demand for warehouses, demand for retail spaces eventually, and the demand for office spaces. So all this are interrelated. So I'm monitoring inflation to see if the Fed has to be even more aggressive than before. And the second part is whether or not we actually go into a recession and whether that has any impact on the job market given the labor shortage.
Well, and there's a couple kind of aspects to going into recession. There's the actual, you know, technical term, like you explained it, the two consecutive quarters of negative GDP growth. And then there's kind of that perception as businesses and practitioners think about it and worry about it. And how do they react? We're in this period where wage growth is off the charts. Like we've never seen it before. We've seen the producer price index like we've never seen it before. How do businesses and practitioners react to that? Do they pull back? Do they dig in, or do they just kind of go with the flow?
You know, that's a difficult question, because even with a, say, reduction in some demand, one does not want to let go their workers, knowing that it's going to be so hard to rehire once the business come back, and which is the reason why that I think the wage growth will naturally slow down if we were to hit recession. So I think that wage growth will begin to moderate. But I think companies will be very reluctant to just immediately let go of people unless, like the mortgage refinancing business, which just by definition, a higher interest rate, refinance business dies off. So they are laying off people. So that has some logical reasoning to it. But I think in other industry, construction, I think they will be very hesitant to let go of people, knowing that it's going to be so difficult to rehire once the economy gets back on track.
And of course, so many companies have moved toward automation. They've innovated to do more with less and do different tasks and processes with different inputs, because supply chain issues just warranted that. Lawrence, I have a final question for you, just to tie this up with a bow. What is the one thing that we should remember about the commercial real estate market in 2022?
So the commercial real estate, before COVID, it was all about the economy. You know, you follow the economy. So if the economy was to slump, then prepare for the commercial real estate to slump. So it was almost one-to-one relationship between economy and commercial real estate. I think what is important this time around is that one has to be far more selective in their decision about how to invest in commercial real estate, how to negotiate leasing or purchasing, advising, because there's several dynamics. Again, office is very unique in the post-COVID environment. What is the new equilibrium? I think people really do not know. There will be a lot of debate, trial and error. And the other part is the financing components. The cap rates have been so low, driven down so low at a time when the interest rates are rising. So given this condition, one has to be very prudent about not borrowing too much, excessive leverage at higher interest rate when the cap rates are already at very low levels.
Thank you to our guest, Lawrence Yoon, Chief Economist with the National Association of Realtors. This is The Take on Commercial Real Estate, with support from the National Association of Realtors and Landmark Credit Union. This is produced by the Commercial Association of Realtors, Wisconsin. Remember to rate, review, and subscribe. For more information, visit carw.com.